real-time basis. We then move on to develop a set of assumptions, and from them flow qualitative and quantitative real-time basis. We then move on to develop a set of assumptions, and from them flow qualitative and quantitative detail translated into variables which affect the schedule, whether, for example, number of people we can mobilize and at what rate we can mobilize them, productivity of the people involved in the effort. Some guidelines, and the principal guidelines in this effort have been environmental guidelines, and those of you who read the report will see that the whole program is keyed to meeting environmental requirements. We get to that stage, we have a framework for the overall program. The next step then is to move into defining in more detail the constraints and the requirements, equipment and the resources from which flow a schedule and specific work plans. The three boxes inside the elliptical dotted area there really represent the core document, the execution plan, which provides a roadmap for the implementation of the job. I'm going to ask Mike to discuss in a little more detail with you some of the assumptions and guidelines that have gone into this plan.
Good morning, my name is Mike Fava. I'd like to flesh out in more detail some of the major components of the planning process that Steve identified. First would be the guidelines we use in the project. These are somewhat of a filter for making decisions. First is we want to work in a safe fashion. Exxon has a tremendous record for safety in the industry. We want to continue that on this effort. We want to complete the work as fast as possible. You'll see a number of milestones we set out to be achieved over the duration of the effort. We intend to meet those as efficiently as possible. We're also very sensitive to any environmental considerations. You'll see a very concentrated effort right away in the pin pit areas. We want to clear those out to facilitate the haul-out by May 10th. We also want to be operationally sound. What that means, in essence, is we do smart things. An example of that would be to remove the heavy oil first, so we don't have any effects of re-oiling. During the planning process, we also have to make some assumptions. One is that we'll have timely approval and sign-offs. We've had very good experience and cooperations with agencies to date and expect that to continue. In the scope of the work, we're using mapping done by ADEC, as well as some aerial surveys done to date in the Gulf of Alaska. Level clean, we're assuming, will be accomplished with three passes with cold water, low pressure flush. We're also assuming the production rates that we outlined several weeks ago in our April 15th plan. Given those and some constraints, we can come up with equipment resources. Some of the constraints that we have, we can deal with, they're controllable. Some were pretty much subject to downstream forces of nature. The environmental and archaeological considerations, we can work around, and again, we'll stress that we're working very hard to clean the pin pit areas before the haul-out season. Weather is a factor that we have to deal with. In fact, we had some very rough weather in late April. Production, Bill talked about different techniques we can use. We expect that with training and continued efforts, people will be more productive. With continued techniques, we can also better that production rate that we'll have for cleaning. Service factor, we feel, is within our control to some extent. We've adopted a conservative sparing philosophy to minimize the amount of mechanical downtime we'll have in the project. Logistics is a very tough issue for us as well. We have a large expanse of area. We've got almost 30 aircraft flying, probably about 1,000 people right now involved in the cleanup effort. And that's a tremendous responsibility for us to coordinate all that in a safe fashion. All those variables put together, we come up with some very basic resource and equipment needs. We have identified essentially the need for 33 LCVs in our peak deployment period and 13 of the larger barges, we call them maxi barges. In addition, we'll have personnel peak of about 3,400 people, of which almost half of those will be directly involved in the cleanup. Those are actually people on the beach cleaning. And that's based on a rotation basis of 2 weeks off and 1 week, 2 weeks on and 1 week off. You see in the slides, if you can, in the background here, the barge deployment to date has been very effective. We're far ahead of the April 15th plan that we had. You'll see here, also on page 38 of your handout, the barge deployment experience to date. We're several weeks ahead of schedule on that. In addition, next slide. The larger barges that we have are also well ahead of schedule. As we feel like we're very effective in getting this thing off the ground. In addition, to show graphically on page 7 the amount of people in the buildup over time, there's a bar chart on page 7. You see the peak there of approximately 3,400 people. I'm going to talk a little bit about the schedule itself, which falls out of this planning exercise. But first, on the top of the last page of your small handout, there's a bar chart, which gives you an overall perspective on the effort. What you should draw from this is that we are very much in a real-time planning situation. The scoping of the amount of work to be done is ongoing. It will be ongoing at least through August. And as the scope of work is better defined and refined, that information has to be plowed back into the planning exercise on a real-time basis. Beyond planning, the design of the restoration equipment, the procurement of the restoration equipment, and the mobilization of the men and this equipment is also in a real-time mode with planning during the ongoing scoping effort. The shoreline restoration, which began mid-April on a testing and training basis, is now picking up speed, is also feeding back information as experience is gained to design, to improve the efficiency of the equipment, and into our planning effort to help our plans. So all the components of this effort, from scoping through the shoreline cleanup itself, is working at the same time in tandem. The second chart we have here is percent complete over time. And it has sort of a concave shape. It starts out rather flat. In the April and May period, it picks up speed through June as more resources are mobilized and continues to gain speed through September 15th when the work will be completed. And there are three basic reasons for the shape of this curve. First being that the production crews are in the process of mobilizing. There will be approximately twice as many LCVs working in June as there are today, and there will be 13 of the larger maxi barges versus one, about to be two, which are deployed now. As these crews come on stream, they're going to contribute to the daily production rates. The second factor is the learning curve of the new crews and the learning curve with this equipment as it's tested in action. This information will be fed back into the design and back into the planning. The third factor which contributes to the shape of this curve is also what Andy Teal referred to and Bill Rainey also, is that the most difficult stretches of shoreline are being cleaned first and will take more time. The third chart on this page is a simplified bar chart showing the time frames when we expect to work the various priorities. A short period of testing and training in mid-April, currently working priority one, which is the pinniped haul-out areas. Along with those areas, some priority 2A and 3A, heavily and moderately contaminated areas adjacent to the pinniped haul-out areas, will be cleaned to prevent recontamination. And then lastly, the remaining heavy, moderate, and lightly contaminated areas. There's some milestones to go along with. I believe Chipper wanted to look at the milestone schedule chart.
Well, let me wrap up this part by just summarizing on page 39, the last page of the handout. Show the chart with the actual milestones which we plan to accomplish and shoreline cleanup. It's basically the same chart that Parker was talking about. We have a priority one area. We hope to conclude our cleanup of the pinnipet areas by the 10th of May. We have another milestone. This is another interim milestone on June 1st, at which time we hope to clean up 20 miles of the beach. Now, by May 1st, or June 1st, we will have about a month of operations. During this time, we'll be able to greatly refine our maps. We'll know much better the actual scope of the amount of shoreline that will have to be cleaned. We'll have a much better estimate of our productivity, the rate at which we can clean the beach. So this is another milestone that we're going to use to reassess our program, where we're going, and how we're going to get there. Priority two is, mentioned, basically completing the activity on the heavily oiled beaches. Priority three is the moderately oiled. And then priority four is the lightly oiled. I want to reemphasize the lightly oiled beaches. We have included all of what we have identified in our plan. There are some areas of beach where the natural wave action, the high energy areas, could clean the beach more effectively than we can, but we have included the lightly oiled areas in our basic plan. I think the question that comes out of this, or a couple of them, one of them has been answered, why is it built up slowly? Parker said the three reasons: we're mobilizing equipment, the amount of equipment working at any point in time will increase very rapidly over the next month. Our learning curve, you heard about all the new enhancements, the additional things that we're adding to these barges, to the cleaning units. We think we can greatly increase productivity. Third thing, the areas we're cleaning now are by far the most difficult areas to clean. We're looking at factors of two or more times more difficult and more slow to clean the earlier high priority areas we're going to tackle first. Second question, can we make it? We've got a plan. We think it'll lead us to basically completing the shoreline cleanup before the weather sets in mid to late September. That was basically what we wanted to say about the shoreline plan. We do have a detailed discussion, which we'd like to go with you very quickly on the waste management part of the program. Our environmental department, or what we will do with the materials that we remove in the cleanup program. I'd like to introduce Rob Dagnick and Bob Goodrich, who are in our environmental department, or our department here, and we'll discuss the details of our waste management program.
Now, while they're coming at me, you might want to go over here.
This is Dave Hammer here, listening to a live broadcast from the Exxon Conference Room in the Royal Center in downtown Valdez. We've been hearing a detailed briefing on the shoreline cleanup plan. We'll now be hearing a briefing on the waste disposal plan, which got quite a bit of discussion last night at the City Council meeting here in Valdez.
Okay. My name is Bob Goodrich. I plan to go over the introduction to the Waste Management Scoping Plan and also discuss the details of the liquid part of that plan. Rob Dragnich here will discuss the solid waste management part of the plan and also discuss permitting issues. If you refer to the first page in our handout, we want to emphasize that the cleanup is not complete yet and that this plan is truly a scoping plan. We estimated the quantities of materials with the best information we had on hand, but that is going to change. It's too early to look at any milestones at this point. These will be generated late in June. The plan's dependent. It's very important that we use the Alyeska waste management facilities there, including their treatment system. And this plan is contingent upon that, and if significant changes will occur to the plan if we in some way are limited in using that. There's a couple other things I'd like to discuss with you on the second page. It gives an overview of the plan. The first and most important aspect of this is that we want a sound operational program. We want to dispose of all the liquid and solid waste in a safe, environmentally sound manner, and really emphasize that we're going to do it in accordance with all laws and regulations. Next, I'd like to quickly give you a few waste management principles that guided the formulation of this plan. The first one is, again, safe working conditions. We want to minimize the risk of future incidents of pollution in all our activities. We want to treat the oily waste. We want to recover as much of that as we can. And on the storage, handling, and transport, we want to do that in the appropriate ways with the proper approvals. And we're essentially going to do all our activities to minimize that risk of supplemental pollution. Now, I think the best thing to do to introduce this topic is really move on toward after page 14, which gives the waste quantities. This will give you a picture of the overall type of things that we're dealing with. As you can see on the solids end of it, there's going to be large material we have to deal with. Heavily oiled logs, sorbent booms, and all of these estimated amounts are in tons. But to give you a perspective on the sorbent booms, we have 50 miles out there of sorbent boom that we're going to be dealing with. The small size part of it, there's a lot of sorbent, rags, clothes that have been oiled. And if you add up all those numbers, you come up to around 7,000 tons. Now, that was quite interesting to us because we did a study about a year and a half ago that correlated a lot of worldwide spill incidences with the original amount of oil that was spilled to that amount of material, debris, waste that's generated, and it came up with a surprisingly close number, about 6,500 tons. So we feel confident that even though this number will change, the 7,000 tons that we have there is a pretty reasonable estimate. Moving on to liquids, you can see we have oils there, both clean oil that we're going to separate out. We also have some contaminated oils we're going to deal with. The total of those adds up to around 85 to 90,000 barrels. The wastewater part of it, we're going to generate quite a bit of wastewater here, but as you'll see a little bit later on, that amount is very small compared to the treatment facility requirements that Alyeska has. Also down in the bottom here, there's always something that falls in between solids and liquids. We call it sort of semi-liquids and solids. Oiled kelp, moose, sludge, and some tarry mats. You always deal with those in spill incidences. Now, to give you a quick overview of the liquid waste part of the plan we have here, I'd like to have you go on to that figure one on the next page and try to look to the right-hand side here. The offshore operations are generating a lot of skimmed oil and water. Also, the shoreline flushing operations, that oil is being skimmed up. So that oily water that's been skimmed is going to be collected in barges and is now. And we're going to employ chemical treatment, demulsifiers, as well as heat treatment to break the oil from the water. We'll do that both on the barges themselves and likely at the Alyeska treatment facility. Looking down further, that oil water, once it's separated, the water part of it will go to the Alyeska ballast water treatment facility. And now, to give you a perspective on this, we estimate that the 5 months cleanup effort on this spill incident will generate about 10 million gallons of wastewater. That's only about a half a day's worth of what Alyeska treats now in their system, which is roughly 15 to 20 million gallons. So we feel confident that we can handle that wastewater responsibly and in concert with Alyeska. Next, you see here the cleaned oil. We want to reclaim as much oil as we can. It doesn't make sense to burn oil or to dispose of it in a landfill. We'd rather recover and use that resource rather than dispose of it. Also, the next part of it is that oil that we cannot clean to a sufficient extent to rerun and reprocess into refined products. We'd like to handle it in a responsible way and basically we're going to have to either incinerate that or handle it in a landfill type operation that's controlled. So basically, that's the overall plan. I want to emphasize that we are going to meet Exxon's policy worldwide and conform to all applicable laws and regulations, and that the rest of the plan here, the next few pages, gives more of the detail associated with that. It also describes Alyeska's wastewater treatment system, sludge handling system. So we're going to work with them to handle these materials responsibly. I think the next part of the presentation really is by Rob Dragnich here. He'll handle the solid waste management part of it and also the permitting issues.
For those of you who want to follow along in the handout, you could turn to page 9 where we talk about solid waste management. You see in the introduction to that here that we have four main objectives in handling our solid waste. The first of those is to dispose of solid waste in an environmentally sound and operationally efficient manner. We want to provide for environmentally sound short-term storage sites. It's very important that we want to minimize the overall pollution potential associated with transporting, storing, and disposing of solid waste, while ensuring that such actions do not limit the overall cleanup activities. We certainly don't want to create any secondary pollution as a result of it. We'll be handling a great deal of contaminated material. And last, we want to describe our plan in sufficient detail to the regulatory agencies to facilitate any permitting that's required, and otherwise to make sure that they're aware of what we're doing and help us in terms of regulatory compliance. We want to make sure that we continue to comply with all the requirements. You can see in the center of the page there that our basic strategy is to implement what we call small-scale incineration, large-scale incineration, and landfilling as rapidly as possible. This will provide us the flexibility to accommodate any permitting delays that might encounter, any equipment problems we run into, and basically to ensure that the waste disposal can occur at a rate that will not restrict our shoreline restoration activities. The next page and a half deal with really the waste profile, and I won't spend any time talking about those here unless someone has some questions. Move into more in terms of the transportation and storage and disposal of the waste. I'll be focusing on the oily waste because I think that's what the largest interest is in. Our plan also deals with the non-oily waste, such as the construction debris, garbage from offshore camps, and that. In terms of transportation of the oily waste, our primary means will be in large containers. They're aluminum containers that are about 12 feet long, 8 feet wide, 6 or 7 feet deep. These are sealed containers, be equipped with lids to keep the rainwater out, provide us what we feel is a very secure means of transporting the waste without causing any pollution associated with that transportation. There'll be two large barges stored offshore that'll provide a combination of storage and transportation for the containers, and then we'll have smaller vessels that we use to shuttle the containers to and from the beaches where they're picking up the debris, and then also back to the central storage or incineration sites. In the Valdez area, we're envisioning three different locations for storing of the oily waste. Two of these sites are within the Alyeska terminal. They're currently in use today and are being stored while we're accumulating smaller quantities of waste in the early part of the cleanup and for the incineration that's taking place now. We're attempting to locate a third site in the Valdez area as well. We've applied for permission for two different locations. We're now working with the DEC and the city of Valdez to see if those are acceptable. If they're not, and we're running into some difficulties there, we're also evaluating three other potential sites as a backup to that. We'd expect to have a site located within the next few days there. For waste that are generated outside of Prince William Sound, that is near or in the vicinity of the cities of Seward, Homer, Sodovia, or Kodiak, we plan to bring the waste to those communities, store them in the same types of containers that we're using on our offshore barge in Prince William Sound, and then from there we would transport them back to a central point, either Anchorage or Valdez, most likely for consolidation with the other waste and disposal. Moving to the actual disposal sites and disposal plans, we're envisioning using a total of 5 small incinerators, 1 large incinerator, and a lower 48 landfilling option. The 5 small incinerators break down via the existing incinerator at the city of Whittier. We've done a fair amount of work with the city on that and some extensive renovation work. We now have an operating permit from the Department of Environmental Conservation to use that. for burning what we call relatively small quantities of oily solids. Alyeska is willing to make their current incinerator available to us up to its existing capacity. And then we're bringing in three new incinerators with a combined capacity of about 2,000 pounds an hour that we would locate at our new storage site when that is finally determined. Offshore, we plan to locate a large burner on a barge that will handle something in the range of 3 to 7 tons per hour. This would be a barge that would move out into the vicinity there. We're cleaning up the oil spill debris. That'll cut down both on the transportation and handling requirements and also move it further away from the communities. That barge is expected to be here around the third week of May. We'll be working with the DEC in the next 2 to 3 weeks in regards to the permitting for that. Disposal of ash from all the incinerators is planned to take place at the city landfills. The ash is a non-hazardous and non-oily product. It'll be ash similar to any other products of combustion. And our last major disposal mechanism is landfilling. We've been working with different companies on that, have identified suitable landfills in the lower 48, moving towards setting up a transportation system to allow us to handle large quantities that way if necessary. We feel that's a very flexible option, one which there would be minimal impediments. It's largely a transportation and handling challenge, but it's one that's in line with the types of things that have done before, so the technology is well proven. We see no major obstacles to implementing that. We feel confident that that alone could handle larger than the volume of waste that we're going to be generating. There is a section of the plan that deals with permitting requirements. Although there really are not a lot of permits required per se, we want to ensure that our activities are in compliance with the applicable regulations. We'll be going through what we would call plan reviews so that the Department of Environmental Conservation and other regulatory agencies are aware of what we're doing and can help advise us of areas where they need to be involved, where we need to ensure that we are in compliance with their regulations, and where they have suggestions to help us do our job better. That's all I really intended to cover on solid waste. If there are any questions, we'll be glad to take those now.
I think that concludes our prepared presentation. General Manager Operations, we'll be happy to try to answer any questions that you might have on the overall program.
So let me just comment in summary. We've got a plan. It's a good plan. It's an environmentally sound plan. It's an operationally sound plan. We're convinced it will work, and that's the basis on which we have provided it to Admiral Robbins. We have, of course, a number of people that have talked to you today, and we can get back in any of the specific individuals that you'd like to talk to. For instance, we have Andy Teal back here. We thought one or two of you might want to have specific questions for Andy, because the thing that's driving this plan and the order in which it's being done are our key concerns over environmental priorities. So we'll be glad to take anything we can answer for you.
Yes, sir.
I have a question for Mr. Goodrich. Could you go back to my...
Sure.
In the waste summary, you list 20 tons of dead animals. What do you base that on?
We use the latest count from our... people who deal with the bird and otter centers, and we add a little contingency to that. It came to about 3,000 birds and 500 otters we used for, and then average weights to estimate that amount in terms of tons.
Is this estimate as of now, or what you estimate?
It was as of a few days ago, plus a little bit of additional added on to it to round off the numbers.
Do you have any estimate of through the summer what that will amount to?
No, I really don't have any idea on that at this stage. I'm not sure exactly how the trends have been going as far as the success rate of survivals and deaths.
Anything else?
Who's the weather expert?
The weather expert. We use NOAA. And we use the...
Who can answer questions?
Helmendorf. We can attempt to answer some general questions. We use the best weather resources we can make available to
you. You mentioned in the letter about the possibility that the weather is a major variable. What is your... Do you have a guess on how many days you're going to lose because of the weather?
The data is in the report, so you can identify it in the report. What we did is we also had a weather forecast by months that was in our April 15th report. Due to bad experience in April, the weather turned out to be a little worse in April than the forecast was. We have increased slightly all the weather downtown. We do think after we get off of the sealed pupping areas that we will not be as weather sensitive as we are in that area. The sealed pupping areas are in fairly open, exposed areas, and that's very weather sensitive. As we move down the shoreline, you have an opportunity then to jump into a protected cove, and do some work when the open shorelines are out of action due to waves or wind. So we think as we move out of the sealed pupping areas, which will occur this month, that we'll be in better shape on weather. Where we're working right now is extremely weather sensitive. Does that help?
Mr. Harrison,
yes, sir.
There seems to be a lot of lower 48, a lot of domestic discontent. You guys are starting to release videotape out of New York and talking to us today. Is this in any way a response to maybe what you guys are going through down there?
This is not a response to that. As you know, all that we've done here is just to lay out for you what the plan is. This is not a PR exercise. It's describing to you, to our best understanding, an environmentally and operationally sound plan. It's open, it's above board, it's on the table, and we're trying to tell you how we're going to get all off the water and off the beaches.
What about the role in the media in all this? You guys have been really slammed by just about everyone. Is that getting old, or is that just part of the game?
I am not a media expert. I am working solely on picking up the oil and cleaning up everything. I don't have an answer for that.
But you read the papers, listen to radio, watch TV. Is it getting old?
If you watch my hours, you'll know that I'm not home much to watch TV, and I don't always read the papers. I'm more concerned about what are we doing every day to get some oil off the beach or off the water.
Have you received any initial reaction from Admiral Robbins on the presentation?
We do not have any official reaction from him. His comments during the discussion and his questions I thought were constructive and good and supportive, but you need to ask Admiral Robbins. I can't speak for him on that. I think we've given him an environmentally and operationally sound plan, and I would expect that he would approve that plan, but that's up to Admiral Robbins. And Admiral Yost, who happens to be in town today.
Last evening at the Valdez City Council meeting, there was quite a bit of talk on the problems the community is already experiencing with permitting of its solid waste system. The city dump has been operating for about a year without the necessary state permits. Have you had an opportunity to deal at this point with the city officials, or has the plan still have been in preparation mostly with the feds? I guess the question is, where are we at with dealing with the city as well as the state on any kind of solid waste disposal in the Valdez area?
You refer to use of the municipal landfill? We've talked to the city and the DEC on that. And at this point, although I understand the landfill does not have an operable permit, that does not seem to be an issue of concern, that there's lots of capacity in the landfill, and they don't foresee the kinds of solid waste that we're taking there to create a problem for them.
You wouldn't expect to be all of a sudden held up because of some last minute change on that?
No, our waste, again, a relatively small quantity in that. That's the garbage type thing that's going there rather than the oily waste.
Wouldn't you also say that not only with the city here but the other cities, the relationship has been very cooperative?
Yeah, very much so.
Anything else?
This is Dave Hammack. You were listening to a live broadcast from the Exxon Conference Room in the Royal Center here in Valdez. There's been a great deal of fairly technical information that has been dispensed today. A summary would be virtually impossible. It would take about as long as the presentation. These documents are available now, and I think that through City Hall and through the City Library, we'll certainly try to make sure that listeners will have access to the handouts that were given today. We will be turning now to KCHU and possibly be able to catch Monitor Radio, which should just be starting up. For the time being, this is Dave Hammack signing off from the Exxon Conference Room in the Royal Center here in Valdez. This is KCHU Public Radio for Prince William Sound.